beneath us, sitting in our seats at contact with earth or our feet on the ground. And taking a few fuller breaths as we slow down, unhook from the endless momentum of it all, the deep activation of what's going on now in so many parts of the world. Stressing and overwhelming our nervous systems, bringing up a lot of anxiety and fear and confusion. So just staying with what is, this is how it is in this moment. So just breathing with how you are, spaciously, gently, kindly. And there's nowhere else to be but right here, right now, as we take this time out to contemplate the Dharma together and really tune into this ancient gift from the Buddha, to just so relevant for now, for every time, every place, and particularly now. It's very important that we have this profound transmission to guide us. So immense gratitude to the lineages from Asia, from the time of the Buddha in India, in the Gangic Plain, all the way through so many countries, cultures, geographies, time, spaces, all the way to wherever you are sitting now, on this earth, on this planet, on whichever nation state, which is made up by us humans, which we are fighting over endlessly for domination and control, forgetting that none of it really actually ultimately belongs to us. It belongs to nature, and to nature it will return. So we are temporary beings in this form, and all of this is arising within this one seamless, timeless, deathless awareness, where there is no actual boundaries in reality, only the boundaries that our mind projects from the false assumption of separation. And it's from that separative consciousness that we practice to awaken from the illusions that we operate under of time, of getting somewhere, gain and loss, trying to hold on so badly to what's slipping through our fingers. So taking a breath, giving yourself this space to just soften and open to yourself, to your being, to being here together in this Sangha field. So I would like to begin this session with sounding the refuges and precepts, as this was the template which the Buddha offered as the core guidance for life, for a whole life, this refuge beyond the worldly winds that blow us here, there, and everywhere else, this steadying within the timeless triple jewel, presence within the heart, within the undying presence of the heart, of the citta, contemplating the Dharma of the world, seeing its nature, practicing the Dharma together as community, and if alone, practicing, guided by the path activity. We're never really alone all is resident here. And guided by this precept vehicle, if everyone kept the precepts or observed them or trained with them, then we wouldn't be in this terrible, terrible situation that we now find ourselves facing. So let's honor this ancient template that the Buddha gifted us, one that undertakes refuge and precepts is considered a disciple of the Buddha. I'm going to screen share and then just go through them, and you're welcome to sound them yourself or just listen and to contemplate as is appropriate and meaningful for you. These are these precepts, Sikkhapadang, meaning they are trainings, not ultimates. We have many gray areas we navigate. We transgress, we start again. It's not a question of creating a guilty self or judging, but just learning where we go off and where we create karma that brings about unhappy results for ourselves and others. Recognizing that, we begin again, honing this allegiance and alliance with the precept vehicle for the sake of these refuges and precepts. The Buddha taught them as streams of blessing for the alleviation and the overcoming of fear, hatred, and oppression. I think I missed one of those, got one of those. But you get the general idea. One who follows the precepts and the refuges is no longer tied to the activity of oppressing self or other, creating harm, generating fear. Every being can relax and breathe out. So let's honor these, honor ourselves for aligning with this vehicle, honor the Buddha, the lineage, through sounding this ancient template. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddha Saranangachami, Dhammang Saranangachami, Sangha Saranangachami. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhamma Saranam Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangha Saranam Gacchami. Panatipata Samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from intentionally taking life. Adinadana veramani. I undertake the training to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the training to refrain from misuse of sexuality and the senses. I undertake the training to refrain from speech that is false, divisive, harsh, and meaningless. Sura merayama japamada tana veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. I undertake the training to refrain from intoxication which leads to carelessness. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. May there be peace. Allowing these precepts, the refuges, the connection with the ancient transmission of awakening that we are a part of, allowing that to settle within your being, reminding you, reminding us all that we are on a path of awakening. And that we have this, in this moment, we are called to bring forth the light of the Dhamma for ourselves, for each other, for this world, as this great shadow pulls so many beings into its vortex. So let's just take this time to steady, to gather. And as we've been taught in the foundations of mindfulness, to just start with what's here, body, breath, sensation, feeling tones. To the extent that you feel is possible for you at this moment, to allow the body to settle, bringing the mind, the attention to the body experience, either the surface, the sensation, or more inwardly, the flow of the breath, whatever feels the most comfortable. And as the mind, with all its busyness and its reactivity and its strategies, complexity, begins to settle on the slower rhythms of the body, helps the mind calm, soothe, slow down, steady, and at the same time the luminosity of the mind suffuses the body, the breath, luminosity of awareness suffusing the body, soothing, calibrating the nervous system, you feel that you're particularly feeling activated or a sense of stress, just perhaps taking a few longer, slower, deeper breaths, accentuating the inhalation, suffusing the breath energy through your body, including the brain, down through the head, neck, shoulders, torso, arms, hands, pelvic area through the belly, pelvic area through the legs to the feet. And on an exhalation, it's just releasing, softening, letting be, letting go for now, for this moment. Tending to the simple, to the present, breath by breath. You finish the meditation, just whatever you're with, whatever's arisen in your awareness, just holding some spacious kindliness for yourself, your being. And extending that to each other here in this space. May all here be protected, be well. And then extending that to every being, whatever form, whatever situation, wherever, through time and space. May they be, all beings be liberated from fear, hostility, and oppression. Thank you, dear friends. Yeah, I think it's very clear that we're in a increasingly dire situation as planetary beings at this moment. It's meta crisis on so many levels. Just I'm over here in the UK, in London, which is actually my hometown. I've been looking after my 69-year-old mother, which has definitely slowed me down. It's been a contemplating a lifetime, her lifetime. She grew up in London, in the Blitz, and that basically shaped a lot of her life, her attitudes, her resilience. And before that, my grandfather, First World War, any time that was mentioned, he couldn't hear anything about it, even when he was in his 90s without crying. It's an unhealed trauma, the things that don't get spoken about through the generations. And here we are again, this old, old story. Fear, hostility, and oppression, all arising from this root of separative consciousness, believing that there is those that are out there that are the problem, that we need to eradicate to bring about our own agency, our own power, our own peace, whatever it is, and this false assumption that is destroying the fabric of our humanity in a way that we haven't seen. It's happening all the time in pockets. We haven't seen it at this scale and the threat to all living systems. So it's definitely caught our attention for sure. I've been watching very closely what's happening in the US, of course, and how quickly things are tipping there into unprecedented levels of violence. Not unprecedented, actually. In some ways, the whole project of the United States was founded, obviously, as we know, deep acts of violence. But in our recent times, seeing this level of the militia unleashed on citizens in the way that's happening, without any accountability, without any sense of how do we know how to stop this sense of passing a tipping point. It was very serious, very dangerous, very threatening. I just want to reflect on this moment a little bit. As in many ways, seeing that this is a great moral failure that we're experiencing globally, but also as really the karmic outcome of this separative consciousness. We haven't awakened beyond that, evolved beyond that. And it's brought us to a moment where crisis isn't an exception, but is actually becoming the operating system, a system that actually generates constant crisis. It's like we've gone into a world that has passed into a threshold that has shifted from a sense of a norm as some accountability, some rule of law, some assumption of shared humane values. That's all giving way to a rule by power, force, money. And the results of that, of course, are ongoing breakdown, political, social, ecological, and the rise of all authoritarianism. These are becoming themes, global themes, based on deep division that have been inflamed and perpetuated through activating the coarsest emotions that we're capable of as humans. Resentment, hatred, fear, and unleashing these and directing them and weaponizing them in the psyche, directing them to those that are most vulnerable, those that are often most marginal, and increasingly it's clear to all citizens that may resist this brute force, operating system of constant chaos, force, violence, authoritarianism. So there's a great sense, I think, for, you know, I feel it in myself, I see it in the around me, of shock, fear, grief, rage, disorientation, freeze in our nervous systems. We used to maybe or can deal with an occasional crisis, but to be in crisis mode the whole time and having our systems activated at that level begins to undermine sense of stability, cohesion, well-being, continuity, safety. So I think, first of all, it's just important to name and to recognize that this is not normal. There is no normal. It's normal only in the sense that this is a new norm. We've been fast pushed into the attempt for us to accept a norm that has all these elements to it of constant vigilance and violence and overwhelm. So in the Dharma, this isn't outside the realm of the Dharma. Buddha taught in his own time, there was a lot of imperial instability and domination and wars and genocide and that were happening, and his remedy was to retreat for sure, but he also directly engaged out of compassion. to advise, to guide, to respond. So this Dharma has two great wings, the wisdom, that which reflects, and when we have a wise a lens through which we can reflect on this moment wisely, we understand none of this is outside of the Dharma. It doesn't mean that it's not dharmic, but it's none of it's outside of what we contemplate and see and inquire into, and also tend to the affects of that, of the impacts, by taking care, first of all, here in our own being, and then further afield, with our communities, our families, our loved ones, and further afield with those that are in our local sphere, in our national sphere, and further afield globally, because there is no out there anymore, over there. We're living in a situation where there's always been a sense this is happening over there. It doesn't really affect us. It is what's sometimes called the imperial boomerang effect, what's been done over there in the colonial mindset, what's done over there inevitably comes back here, comes home. So it's a very sobering moment, it's a very challenging moment, but it's not outside of our ability to meet, to practice with. You just have to shift from expecting the world to ping back to some normality, to understand this is our new world at the moment, and to adjust how we perhaps understand the Dharma and what it can now, parts of it perhaps that haven't been emphasized or lived, can rise and come to the fore to meet us and support us. And really understanding that this separative consciousness that's at the core of it, the engine of it, is this, it's perpetuated by fear, not really seeing, not really coming to terms with the fact that we can't dominate this world ultimately, that we face impermanence and death. And so there's this great fear, and from fear, grasping for security, for control, for domination, using violence. And then by necessity, this generates the conditions for collapse, suffering and collapse. So this is the sort of chain of dependent origination that arises within our own process, what we don't see clearly, what we ignore. We don't understand the nature of reality itself. We perpetuate suffering by making assumptions about self, about other. And now we're seeing that at a collective level, that a world built on separation inevitably produces endless dukkha, because there's no really an over there that's separate from right here. We live in a deeply interbeing world, as is said. And when we understand that, when we feel that, when we're in that, then it helps to shift our view and our understanding of refuge, not so much just as a withdrawal, keeping the world out there, which is important that we withdraw sometimes, but as a ground of being that helps root us in more capacity, in ethics, in compassion, and in willingness to work with these edges that we've perhaps only have worked with occasionally in crisis mode. But now we have to really understand, how do we meet fear? How do we meet overwhelm? How do we draw deeper and find a refuge that's deeper than the suffering? How do we make that real and constant, more constant? It was something when Kittisar and I first were invited to teach in South Africa as apartheid was falling just after the elections there in 1994, there was great amount of euphoria, but a great amount of violence as well that was being unleashed. a lot of people were getting guns, and he's like, well, we're not going to be getting a gun. but I did, there were some things that happened that brought, I really felt, could feel this primal fear for one's life. As if this was very, the levels of violence that were happening, and near us, around us, people. So it was a very profound contemplation of realizing I had to really come to terms with the possibility of violent death. And there was something about really making that conscious. Not that I was looking for that, and or not taking care in how to move in such a society at that time, but actually to welcome the monster, welcome the fear, and to have a relationship with it, and allow that to, for me to explore the reality of death, the reality of uncertain death, the reality perhaps even of violent death. I don't, none of us would want that at all, but there was some sense of other power that came by just being willing to meet the direct raw experience of fear for one's life. And to contemplate, what am I going to, how am I going to protect myself? And obviously one does the things that are necessary to protect oneself, being careful where you go, how you relate. The protection for us was really to relate with all the people around us, regardless, with kindness, with interest, with engagement, from a place of humanity, of shared humanity, and to our trust was in the Dharma. To really, what does that mean? So this for us now is a really deep question. Our trust in the Dharma to return to as refuge, and that this other wing that perhaps has been less honed or honed in a way that has you know, the wing of compassion, often helping people in the situations that are less fortunate or responding to suffering in ourselves and others. But how do we hold compassion when we're literally looking at people that are destroying so much from deep hatred? What is that? What does that mean? What is the really the depth of a compassion that can hold boundaries, can challenge for the sake of justice, which is very necessary, otherwise we lose all humane values, but at the same time not hold hatred in the heart. This feels really important. I was just looking at a clip that came out of Minnesota where there was one of the vigilantes that was, I don't know if that's the right word, but one of the militia that had turned up because he was keen to add to the violence and perpetuate it. But he suddenly found himself isolated and surrounded by angry people, and his expectation was that he was going to be harmed or killed, and he had a lot of fear. Suddenly he was felt very powerful, he had all this gear on, and suddenly it just flipped. And at that moment, expecting that he was going to be harmed, there was an African American man standing near him, and the African American man walked toward went towards him, and it his he got he was just see that this fear, and instead of hitting him or creating any violence, the man just took him and led him out and protected him. This power of that moment of turning a situation, and this is the skill of the Dharma. It's how to, the kung fu of it, if you like, how to change in a moment. You can't plan for a moment like that. You can't strategize for it, but you have to trust that what you are trusting in, the Dharma, will rise up in any moment to meet you and respond accordingly for the optimum outcome for yourself and for others, according to the Dharma. And so this tending inwardly, by just realizing that we are now in a world that's demanding that we grow up in a whole other way than perhaps we've been, has been necessary until now. We realize what's at stake. And we hone our lives accordingly. Hone our spirit accordingly. There's a lot of forces that want to oppress and control and dominate from a place of fear, underestimating the power of the human spirit that actually has always fought for freedom. And so, this spirit of freedom, the spirit of when we really feel free, we are free to love. We don't have to hold hatred. There was a moment when someone used to come to learn meditation at our little center in South Africa, and he had been on the security detail of Mr. Mandela. And before that, he was, I think he was in some kind of in the army, perhaps, I'm sure, probably, and in the nationalist government, the apartheid government. He had, like many, they like switched and changed and transformed themselves, and he'd been chosen to support Mr. Mandela. And this man used to come in his army fatigues to learn meditation in his gun. He used to come to our place to learn meditation. So we said, well, you can come in the shrine room, but you have to leave your gun outside. It sort of just trying to help and support this person and all the struggles he was going through. He was told this story about how it was a very near to us where we were teaching and living. We were on the border between KwaZulu-Natal and what's now the Eastern Cape, was then the Transkei, where there'd been an inflamed, low-grade war, really, semi-civil war. When we arrived, we were right on that border, and there was a lot of violence going on. And there was one particular town near us that had experienced a lot of killings and assassinations of political leaders. And it was the opposite party, the Inkatha Freedom Party, to the ANC party. So the party that controlled that town were not Mr. Mandela's peoples. So he asked to go to that town to bring peace. And this friend that used to come, or this person that used to come to learn meditation, was in the same car to was as part of his security to go into that town. So they were driving along into the town, and they were advising this guy's like, there too, when Mr. Mandela said, "I want to get out and walk through the town." And they were saying, "You can't do that. There's been political assassinations. You could be killed." And he said, "If I can't, after my struggle, if I can't be free to walk in my own country, then what was the point of that struggle? What's the point of freedom?" So he had an Kittisar and I met him several times in different functions. He had this tremendous presence of the spirit. It was undeniable. And many people wrote that there were even his guards when he was imprisoned, about how they had to respond to him with respect. And he carried himself in that way, that when he walked in along the high street of this town, people just started crying. We were overcome and we felt this sense of his peace, his steady way he would walk, his steadiness, his presence, his spirit. Now, it's not really that we can be these great luminaries, but we can be inspired by a different way of responding, a different spirit, a different energy that we can bring into the world at this time as Dharma practitioners, not through ignoring or hiding away, but actually, really, the Buddha encouraged us to meet dukkha, whether it's personal or collective, to actually be able to overcome it, to know that we feel it, the enormity of it, but not to fear the fear. The fear is there. But we don't have to fear the fear. We don't have to put ourselves in, we might not be able to avoid unsafe situations, or we might choose to go in there as an ally or to support, or it might come to us. And it's at that moment where is our mind, where is our consciousness? Like at the moment of death, where do we put our mind? The moment of great stress, where do we put our mind? This is what we train for. So Ajahn Chah, we Dharma is a training, it's a practice ground, it's a preparation for when really difficult moments arise. So you know where to put your mind, you know how to hold steady, you know how to remember compassion, and you're not pulled up into that activation, violence, fear, overwhelm. This is a fierce level of compassion, and this is well within our practice and our capacity. Our capacity as we're shifting from a world, the logic of a world, the logic of empire that's been with us forever, based on hierarchy, control, the sense of power held in by hierarchies of power, to a world where we can actually express a different kind of and live a different, the world of relationship and the world of creating networks of care, shared resilience, a world where we grow courage, conscience, where we bring forward this sense of collaborative compassion, of community. I think a time to build community, not great structures of, that emulate the logic of empire, but the logic of, say, nature that moves and collaborates and is not driven by outcomes, but driven by the force of life, of joy, of connection, of interdependence, weaving webs of those connections. So we have this not only to emerge the Dharma within ourselves, but we have this opportunity in our sanghas and communities and the spaces we move within in everyday life to meet each other, perhaps in different ways in this time. Not just in a slightly normalizing, but really real, more present. Moments of interest, inquiry, going beyond our silos. So I'd just like to offer these few reflections that this sort of crashing dinosaur of this old world, its last acts of violence, born of this great separative consciousness, trying to control it all, is really a sign of weakness, actually. Usually when empires come to their end, when apartheid was failing, it becomes more violent, tries to hold on, tries to dominate. And it looks like strength, but it's weakness. It's a death move. But it's not that there isn't enormous risk and threat because of how much power, how much can be lost, how much is being destroyed already, how many have been destroyed. But we, the counter force of the Dharma, of the spirit, of reality, of non-separative consciousness, of interbeing, of moments of breaking set, breaking out, not to underestimate that when we do that more together and collectively, the enduring power of this, building out a different world, a different story from underneath and from and around this attempt to use this violence and force to control everything, to use prayer, to hold steady, start again, to work with the overwhelm that we feel, and to trust the refuge, trust the Dharma. The Dharma will rise up in most mysterious and unexpected ways, what we've experienced, I've experienced, to guide, to protect, to illuminate, to free, to joyously be liberated, even in the midst of a catastrophe, of monsters roaming, of uncertainty. Liberation is possible. Liberation is always calling us. Love is always calling us. Freedom is always appearing within us. Just have to notice and embody and live from there. So that's what I'm contemplating. I'm not necessarily adept at shifting sets from this old world into meeting this time, this meta crisis, but I know it's possible. I have faith it's possible. I have faith that the deeper the shadow, the greater the light that can emerge from it. The greater the dukkha, the greater the liberation if we know how to contemplate and be with and engage the challenge without being crushed by it. So, dear friends, take heart. I know it's a very, especially watching what's going on in so many places. And, it is deeply disheartening and upsetting. More than that, it's terrifying. But let's not be terrified by those that want to terrify. Let's hold steady. So, yes, welcome. If anything you'd like to share or offer or ask about, and again, any of you'd like to support Sangha Life, as Carol was inviting, gifts of dana, that's always also appreciated. Thank you for that. So, welcome to put anything in the chat, or if you want to I guess the react button, there's a raise hand. My brain, sorry, that was, I feel like my brain is very slow. The last short while, yeah, the book, you can just book is time to stand up. You can just put it, you can just put it in the Google, and you'll find it online. Yes, I hope my, well, I think I. That's good. I was intending to be. It's a sobering moment. It's like the moment the Buddha left the palace. We've been in a palace. This culture, this civilization is an immature civilization. We've been allowing ourselves to be entertained endlessly and frivolously. We've used resources, consumed without end in sight. So I think it is a moment of sobering and growing up and understanding what's at stake. It's hard. And it is, I was saying about speaking slowly because I can feel like the how much there's a shock sense, a shock from what's happening, how it affects the brain and one's capacity. So please do take care, slow down and take your time, realizing there's a lot to manage. Just, we're not even on maybe the front lines, but just the impacts of what we're seeing and witnessing is felt. So, Ellen, hi.
Oh, hi. So glad to be here. I've only been to, I guess, a couple of others. And I guess coming from a little bit of a different angle, I've been using what's going on. I am in the United States and was in New York City for 30 years as an activist. So, of course, it's horrific, so much of what's going on, the racial profiling. But there was always racial profiling against Black people. So that was part of my activism, civil rights activism. So, but it's interesting. I feel immense peace within and silence. And for me, it has helped me to go further within, deeper dive. And I feel that what's going on does not touch me or taint me in any way, which sounds funny, but it allows me to be out, marching in No King's March. I've been sending money to some people who've lost their jobs. Because of whatever, anyone who goes against this dictator, this tyrant. But I've also been able to curb my hate. I was feeling a lot of hatred. As my son says, this is the most dangerous person in the one of the dangerous people in the world. There's plenty of them. So I don't want to, it's like Putin-like for me. But it that all that horrific stuff, I've been able to use it to really purify myself and to let go of hatred and other intense emotions I've had. And I've actually kept up with everything. It's important to stay awake and aware. I do feel like we're in the late 30s in Germany, and my ex-mother-in-law was a Holocaust survivor. So I'm very aware of what's going on, but it also, I am using it to aid in my transcendence, transmutating emotions. And so I feel more liberated than ever. And I can actually show up peacefully, at rallies, at everything without yelling and screaming, which I might have done several years ago. So, I feel like I guess I'm using everything in my life for freedom, for liberation. So I realize if I'm not peaceful within, how can I expect to see peace outside of myself? So for me, the work's always been an inner work. So, but anyway, thank you. I appreciated the meditation. It was wonderful. So thanks. But I am using it as a positive, which sounds, it's a different angle, but I'm doing it. So, yeah, committed.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you for sharing your perspective and your experience. Yeah, we're just talking about that with some friends I'm staying with about how the world we're going into. One of the things that's happened is we've been siloed as in our individualism so deeply, that relationships have become more transactional often than the natural way that some of us may have remembered if we grew up in extended families like I did, just until a certain point when we moved out of London, where people lived more, sharing, borrowing from each other, helping each other out. And there's a loss of natural sense of community. We have to create clubs and this and that, the natural sense of coming together. And one of the outcomes, I think, of the world we're going into is will be the rekindling of really needing to help each other. And I think one can practice getting around by allowing oneself to need something from someone rather than being so independent. We ha can be independent because we have the economics for it, maybe. But to feel people don't like to ask for help, but actually it's that or to receive help. We're good at maybe giving help because it makes us feel more powerful. But so usually when I come over to the UK, one of the things I do, hire a car, just for various reasons, help my mum go shopping. So she's getting a little old for that now. It's 96, but I decided just to go around on public transport, ask friends for help, just finding a different way of, and it's been so rich to, to actually say, hey, share food, share stories. So one of the separative consciousness that has been politicized and weaponized almost to keep people separate has actually undermined our ability to really stop what's happening much sooner, because we have we're just relying on meeting each other like we are now, which is good, but it's not really, it's important. In fact, it's wonderful we can do this work in the way that we're doing and meeting each other across boundaries and cultures and countries. But there's something about, like how could we create communities that weren't just, that were just really, really real and, helping each other, coming out of those silos, breaking those barriers, those walls that we have been positioned within and position ourselves within. Owen, hi.
Hey there.
Hey.
How is it?
All right, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, this is my first time ever being in such a place.
All right.
I've never I've been, well, I've been here and there for because I do meditation occasionally. I did it so in the I do I usually do in the morning.
Right.
I use my heart, my heartbeat as a meditation.
Got it.
As meditation, and I'm interested in. I've been interested in like therapies that use it. I practiced myself something called internal family systems,
Right, yeah.
and I've done a lot of work on that. And I've just more recently gotten really kind of big into Buddhism, especially mostly just thanks to my personal crises kind of leading into that.
Right.
And especially Rinpoche, which is he's kind of popular
Yes.
around. Well, I've watched Tim and I've him and also too. I've done also like ACT. ACT also has mindfulness in it. So for me, I apologize if I'm just a little bit like I'm like not like good with my words. Because I have autism.
Right.
I have autism.
You're welcome. Like, take your time.
And thanks for that. Yeah, the mindful, like, I act as mindful practices, like, I call it like connecting with the present time flow, because time, like, your time is always passing, and you're always, and there's always something that's happening. Remember, the world is always changing a little bit. It's just that we don't like pay attention to much of it. We don't have a deep sense of like how things are changing.
Right.
It's called change blindness. We don't have a real appreciation for how things change, even light, how light changes, like how light and pressure waves change, stuff like that.
Right.
So you can connect with the time present time flow through a mindfulness practice, and then connect with the ecological version of the self, which is like no self, or Atman, or which all self, or Buddha nature, like things like that, and then you can then what you do with that is that you connect with your values,
Right.
connect deeply with your values, and then you commit to an action. Commit to action, orient yourself around those values. That's what ACT is kind of all about. Well, also, ACT is kind of all about, but it's also about the processes of being able to receive in the world around you and in yourself,
Right.
and also being able to not be identified with
Right.
the world and the self, and this and the self and your emotions, and in self, that there's a separation, that there's a that you're like, for me, I view it as like being the producer of my emotions. I also produce the sight for which I see, and that's something else that I can go into perhaps next time, because that would be kind of be a bit long, be a bit like
Right. Well,
mindy, but
I appreciate what you've shared, because and your understanding and how you're working with the Dharma, with the practice, it sounds good.
yeah, it
So
sounds
that's
wonderful.
right on. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah. Next time we go deeper in your what you're saying. Yeah. Thank you so much, Owen. It's good to meet you. Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks for that comment about karmic outcome of separative consciousness. The meditation of the Kuan Yin's meditation, subtle meditation, is Kuan Yin is the one who's known as the Bodhisattva who listens to the sounds of the world. And the subtle meditation is returning, what's called returning the hearing or listening into the self nature. What it really means is the dissolving of this separative consciousness, this feeling of the boundary that we hold, which is a true psychological necessary boundary between self and other. But it's not a boundary in reality, because there is so much interbeing between everything and all things that are conscious. All things are conscious. And so we're into being all the time, and we consider ourselves a solid entity which has its place, but we're also into being. And the meditation of Kuan Yin is really from the place of all things are resident in this one awareness. The demons and the monsters and the angels, the whole spectrum of how consciousness can appear. And so Kuan Yin is the one that enters the sentiency of beingness for the sake of knowing, inquiring, healing, liberating. And that is that it's not an equanimity that all things are equal in the manifested world. There has to be a place of morals and justice and boundaries and accountability to sustain a level of humanity, humane values. But at the level of this deeper meditation, there's an equitableness of whether we meet angels or whether we meet demons, the practice is the same. What we do will be different in response. This meeting of beyond separative to dissolve that karmic momentum that then creates the projection of the division and the projection of the reaction onto the other. This is the split project dynamic is the cause of so many wars. Actually, you have to have some peoples that are dehumanized to such an extent that rather than working with the source of the hatred, the source of the violence, the fear, within unprocessed, that are unprocessed within the human psyche, it's taken out and projected. So this is a very deep and important, both spiritually and psychologically, to really contemplate this core of separative consciousness and how that operates within us and without us. Because without understanding that, then we keep repeating these patterns of destruction, self-destruction, destruction of others, destruction of the planet now, a sort of collective psychotic break from reality that's separated out so much, can't feel anything anymore. And then atrocities happen. So, sorry, Oni, sorry, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, it's Ani. Hey there.
Okay.
Good to meet everyone. And I'm zooming in from Houston, Texas, and USA. And it's just nice to hear your UK perspective, especially. Just, it feels very validating because in some parts it's day is normal. And I think it's so important to validate those feelings and to feel the feelings. And welcome to new people who are just finding the Sangha and the Dharma and the Buddha. It's a good place to be. To me, it's good insurance, to have that serenity, no matter, I'm finding my angels or my demons. I'm responding in the same way the way I'm outward in the world. So to me, just coming here and finding the cushion and finding bits of moment, mindfulness and just moments of just being here and now, because I can really race right at it. And I've had visions of what could be, and it's hard to deal with, but having that time to take a moment and reflect, and sometimes I get to this point of wondering, well, what is the problem? And I think, a lot of times we've had a lot of mechanics in our societal and other expectations. And I just keep coming down to patriarchy. Even Buddhism has its own patriarchy where it has this authority of triangle, and we need to be working in circle. And it's been nice to be part of this circle today.
Thank you so much. And yeah, thanks for everything you shared. Right on. And yeah, we definitely have a patriarchal Buddhism. Patriarchy. So the meta system of everything, really, which also goes beyond gender as well in its conditioning, of course. Ocean, hello. Nice to see you.
Hi, thank you so much for your talk. It was really moving and yeah, necessary, I feel. My question was kind of maybe a parallel sort of thing. But I've been reflecting recently when I've done sort of loving kindness practices. I've kind of on a couple of occasions tried to challenge myself to think of and send loving kindness to, say, like a really awful political leader. And I've just really struggled to do that. And some advice that I'd got from a teacher when I was on retreat was to, I think this is what they said. I think it was something around the lines of, like, for someone to be that way as a political leader, they would need to be kind of suffering a huge amount on the inside. And to find loving kindness like within that like suffering rather than like, you know, obviously their actions are awful. It doesn't mean you are sort of absolving them of any accountability. It's just seeing the human. But I was kind of curious, yeah, what's your perspective on that? Yeah, just interested.
And that's a really important question, and I think we all can sympathize and empathize with what you're saying. The way I approach it is it's also the practice of not dwelling inwardly in aversion and hate. It's not that you don't feel that or anger, but you don't dwell in it. You don't dwell in those feelings and turn them to hate. So the metta can start there, right, in the inwardly. And then those energies, when they're transformed and transmuted from the rawness of the aversion, hate, become clarity. So clearly, you see clearly. And then, you know, to put your mind to someone that will evoke all the feelings that can be very strong, you don't really, I don't think you have to do that to the person. What I do is to the energy itself, you know, like to remove the personhood, you know, from, you know, just see that this is an en this is a they are expressing an energy that's in the collective, and it's that energy that then I work with that, like by suffusing that energy and calling a prayer, calling in, I use prayer, calling in the stream of awakening or the Dhamma protectors. The Buddha taught protection chants and mantras. He said, do these in you know, in times of peril because they're protective. So or sharing or blessing, then I might dedicate that to that person. But I won't necessarily, if it starts to evoke or I feel it's I don't really feel I want to or can take my mind to the person themselves. If I'm in a very deeper place of consciousness, that non-separative, then it's easier to do that. But it's not always easy to do that. So I don't think one has to push it or force oneself. And just say, like, you know, that energy is like that. It's you know, and may this energy be freed. It's like stuck. And these this a lot of what's happening is we're working with a level of in the psychology, in the psyche, in the soul of humanity, in the ancestral realms, deep energies that are being expressing themselves through those violence and through people that are willing to be conduits for that and work with that and project that haven't been liberated. They're not liberated. They're like, you know, so that the work of liberation doesn't have to engage everyone in person. It can be a sort of collective calling. And if you don't feel you have the strength or the capacity or that you can do that personally, then, you know, calling on like the Kuan Yin energy, the protectors, the Dhamma protectors, and the offering of from their practice, from all the forces of awakening, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the saints, sages, the elemental beings, the good answer. You can call all of those. This is actually a Buddhist practice. It's not always taught in that way, but it was very essential, sort of like for protection. And you ask them on your behalf to send, you know, to share merit, to share blessings, to share punya for the liberation of those beings. For their liberation, and may they be liberated. You know, so yeah. So that anyway, that's I'm just sharing how I practice. I'm not saying it's right or I'm not trying to. I don't really like teaching an orthodoxy here. I'm just sort of the way that that I find that it's helpful to practice meeting these very, very, very overwhelming, threatening, distorted, ugly. Demonic type energies, you know, they're real, they're there, they're in this, they're sort of float, it's like floating And so may they find peace, may they be liberated, may they leave this realm and find their release, rather than being stuck and perpetuating the same story. But thank you, it was such an important question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was really insightful and helpful.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Mary, hi. I think it's probably realizing we're getting towards time, but lovely to see you and hear what you'd like to share. Oh, sorry, I can't hear you, Mary. You need to unmute yourself.
Hi there. Thank you for your talk. I felt a bit shocked in a way by your talk. And I think what was shocking about it for me was it feels to me like you're feeling the world situation. You're not comment it was I my sense of you is that you are really feeling what's going on. And this that had a sort of waking up effect on me because I've been struggling to feel because things are so very overwhelming. And even empathy, empathy or I mean, I can feel compassion for people I know, people I'm in relationship with, but people I don't know who are suffering. And I know many people are suffering around the world, but the question is really about the role of feeling. And how to remain somewhere in touch with it so that I don't just become somebody numb, really, or and the thing that really struck me about what you said was you said people don't feel and then we end up in war. And I feel that somehow the lack of feeling or the lack of ability to feel does end up with some kind of conflict or something like that. So the question's a bit vague, but it's something around the idea of, what do you feel is the role of feeling, just remaining open to feeling.
Yeah, it's a really important and deep question, Mary. And it was very clear, actually. And thank you for that and inquiry. And I think there's different levels. I mean, I think firstly, as one of our teachers said, sometimes you can't drink the ocean in the whole one gulp. You can just sip what you can manage. And so we're all at different places and different. And in different situations, we have lesser and more capacity, depending on all sorts of conditions that we're in and what is happening around us. So generally speaking, taking care of what our nervous system can handle is a very wise thing to do, and to moderate that and to take care. I think the very way that you're inquiring to me reveals that you're not someone that was going to go numb, because you're inquiring and exploring this question. And the feeling with this is a Buddhist practice in terms of feeling with suffering is something that we cultivate. Everything's a cultivation. We're just in a curriculum right now that's fast forwarding and stretching us all in very deep and profound ways. But you also have to manage your life and pace yourself. So I think just to do the pieces that you can, and having compassion for ourselves in this process, that we're all in, you know, there's a overwhelm for all of us. I've just probably lived longer and done a lot more, you know, in than had to. I had to work at where I am now to feel with more than I was able to when I was. One of the reasons I went into a monastery is because I didn't want to feel. I wouldn't want to be in the world. It wasn't only not feel the world. I didn't want to be in it. And ironically, being in a monastery was, I was confronted with being close to and living in community and having to feel a lot more than I wanted to. You know, so I had to grow, but it was a practice. And so what we think we can do now, you know, if we feel limited in some way, that's not always going to be how with practice we can look back and say, hey, a few years ago I wouldn't have been able to cope with this. It would have completely blown me out the water. I would have felt completely footless. And you know, somewhere along the line you realize, well, I managed this pretty well actually, and or I reacted, but I was able to manage and then respond or stay with a situation. So just that interest, like you expressed, is the key, just to stay interested in that point of contact, feeling your capacity, what's happening, where you need to withdraw, where you can stay present, where you can stretch.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You know, the Buddha taught a gradual way. He's like a going into a mist. When you go in, you know, when you walk into the mist, you're dry, your clothes are dry. But if you're in the mist for a while, suddenly the clothes get wet. At what point did that happen? You don't always know, but something alchemically changes as you bring the practice into the alchemy of your system. And at some point, you'll see, you know, you'll have more capacity.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I know we're going a little bit over time. I just what Kate's put in the chat. I think something that is similar, I feel for you, Kate, with I completely feel you know, you're talking about the rage and anger and hostility. To all who voted for this regime, all supporting it, and it's so ugly, it's so horrific what's happening, and what's happening around the globe. We've just watched 2 years of horrific genocide of people in Gaza, and we all feel this. I think it's very natural to feel what you're saying, and yes, the protests can seem performative. I don't think they're hopeless. I think with this, we're seeing each other. Yeah, this is our edge. This is the edge we are. It's very true what you're saying. You're very real in. But this is why we need the Dharma. The Dharma is the medicine because while we feel this, we don't want to be stuck in these energies. We help to liberate them. You know, these. They aren't ultimately who you are, what you are. They are roving energies that are unowned, and if we don't take care of them, they will create more destruction. So we're like tending, and like orphans of consciousness, and we're turning up. We're clumsy. We're not all trained as activists. We're not all organized or strategic, but we're learning. You know, some have been on that path longer, some communities for centuries. So we're learning. We're in a learning curve very fast. So don't be too hard on yourself. Thank you, my sweetheart. Thank you, Kittisaro. The lovely note. Yes, perilous situation it is indeed. May we rise up, we can rise up and meet it. I believe that. Yeah, Kuan Yin. Oh, yeah, Namo Guanxi Yin Pusa. Thank you, Dan. Yes, lovely that you've lived in China and Taiwan, have a strong connection. The Tao of Crying, I think crying is good. Grail House is hosting an all-night vigil next Saturday, raising money for Médecins Sans Frontières for Gaza and Sudan online. Thank you. Wonderful. Well, dear friends, let's call it well here a night or a morning, where if you're on the over in the US or the West Coast. Thank you all so much. And holding you with much love and prayer, and completely with everything everyone has said here in the same stew, working the same edges and trying to also hold the light of the Dhamma with you, and for sure falling in pits and falling over many times, starting again, brushing ourselves off. And yes, thank you for Sangha Live. Thank you for this community. Thank you, everyone. Go well, stay well, and let's continue holding this lamp, this gift of the Dharma, knowing that all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, the awakened ones, the Buddhas of old, the ancient ones, the ancestors, the elemental beings, the protective forces, the subtle beings, radiancies, the good humans, the web of life of nature, the deep intelligence of earth, these are all allies. We're in a cosmology of interbeing and consciousness awakening together, and the shadow is forcing our awakening. So yeah, we will definitely feel it, but we also are humans in fragile bodies, fragile psychologies, prone to being overwhelmed, so take care. And remember, I see a picture of Wolfgang has a beautiful picture of Rama Maharishi. It's a lovely, beautiful gaze of deep peace, the deep peace of the spirit, of the deathless heart. So remember, this is our true belonging. And with that, we will be more fearless, more immutable, more able to meet this time. Blessings, friends. Much love. And see you down the road.